Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Padawan Unlimited podcast for Star Wars Unlimited, the trading card game. And it is also a YouTube channel. Today, I am joined by background music, as well as Rob, Corey, and a very special guest, Larissa. Larissa, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. I'm really happy to have you. You're a listener. You're also a judge. You're like a community organizer in many ways. Like, I've seen you around in a lot of different events, PQs. So you do a lot of different things. And I'm just so happy to have your perspective on the podcast today. So thank you. Is there anything you would want the community to know about you? Like, if they were like, oh, hi, I'm Larissa.
I am very new to this world. I kind of grew up, if you will, with a my husband is a lifelong Magic player, right? So I grew up next to card games that way, but actually participating and diving straight in head first as a judge is very new to me. So don't expect me to know everything, but I will certainly try to find help where I can.
Oh, no, not a problem.
Oops.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was muted. I was going to say, like, Larissa, you're the first person that we met from the podcast in person. So that was really special. So thank you so much. That was really cool.
Yeah, it was at the,
Red Cap in Philly
that we did like maybe two or three sets ago.
Yeah, that was awesome. You guys, that was a really great moment for me as a new player, right? Like, you let me Luke's at that point in time that I did not have. And to be handed that and trusted with that and like be welcomed into the community that way, I think that was great. So like, I really appreciate you guys and the podcast, and yeah.
Glad we're all here now. So it's great, and we
appreciate you. Life has gone, so you know, it's all comes full circle. So thank you for giving us an hour of your time for free.
No worries.
All right. So piece of logistics before we go into the meta segment, or not the collection segment, and then the main topic, which the main topic today is going to be about building and or rebuilding the Swoo community. And I think people know what we're talking about there. It's going to be a very, very heavy topic, I think. Continuation of kind of the series in terms of like, where's Swoo going to go from? So piece of logistics, we have the content creator Ewok mat, spec event exclusive. That's the raffle was from 2 weeks ago. So I'm just doing a random spin pick ticker here. And we'll see who wins. Entries closed today. So
that's such a cool mat. Like, this is one of my favorite mats. I'm so excited that someone, one of you guys, one of your listeners is getting it. And let's see.
What we got? So it's Shred the Gnar. Shred the Gnar.
Rats.
Congratulations to Shred. I think it's because I think they have threes as the E. So it's Shred the Gnar. Congratulations, person.
Awesome.
We're excited for you to get that, Matt. I'm going to contact you after this podcast gets released for your contact information so that we can get that shipped out to you. And it'll be awesome. So thank you for support. As you know, it's always a thank you to you all. And then also, we're really close to 500 subs, means that we are very close to giving away a 2024 convention pack valued at $300 USD. So if you have any friends, tell them to subscribe and listen.
we're knocking on the door, man. We're knocking on the door.
Yeah, we're too legit to quit. All right, so let's move on to the collector segment. Corey, let's get into it.
Well, we had the FFG stream today.
We did.
And it was all about booster packs. So we're getting some changes to the booster packs, which are all really good changes, I will say. Like, nothing that they said today was like, why are they doing this? Or like, it doesn't make sense. And one of the biggest change from the get-go is that regular foil cards are gone. They're just not going to be a thing anymore. So we will not see regular border foil cards in boosters anymore, which it was like the biggest bummer about Carbonite packs, right? It was like that first,
like,
part,
half of it
was these foil cards that majority of players did not want. Like, Lewis, I don't know if you played with those foils in your decks just because you couldn't get other ones. Nobody wanted them. They're giving them away.
I play shamelessly with all of my foils. I love a shiny card, and I keep things pretty well bind. Like, everything's bindered, so they're smushed flat. And then I double sleeve everything because I'm that kind of person.
I think we all are, but
that's
the point. But okay, yeah. No, so then, are you a little upset about that? They're not going to match now.
Not necessarily, but I'm going to have to adjust my bindering system.
Well, the thing is, we are getting a guaranteed hyperspace foil in these packs as well. Yeah. So the big changes that they said were we're going to have no more foils that are going to be the regular border. You're going to get a guaranteed hyperspace every pack now. And in that regular, or not regular, but in that rare and legendary slot that we get those cards in, there is a chance now for a prestige non-foil version of a card.
Yeah, I think they said it was the uncommon slot that sometimes gets the rare, the secondary rare or legendary. So it's the, what is that? That's the 14th card slot, which is exciting. I personally am excited that I no longer have a binder full of Pringles. That's a positive for me in many cases.
I think there's a lot of really good details that I think either in the stream or in the article that they posted on StarWarsLimited.com. But suffice to say, I think this is good. I think almost every single thing they said was good for collectors, players, and just like investors, I guess. I mean,
and also for like the fact that they're listening, like, right, for the future of the game, like they're listening to people's complaints, to their observations, and to what people are wanting from packs. And when you open a pack, like that feeling of opening a pack kind of diminished a little bit when like Carbonite packs came out, like the regular ones I'm talking about, the play boosters or whatever you want to call them. The regular packs was just, it didn't feel as special when you had Carbonite packs. So how can you bring that feeling back? And I think these changes help with the chance of getting a prestige card now, because in a limited play format, you could be playing with these cards too, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, the addition of the prestige in there, I think, is a really great add, because again, it's not at the rarity rate of like a showcase, but there's still some excitement and some chase in like opening these up. But they did say another thing that they did point out is that they are still keeping the format of the card packs the same, so that there is still support for limited and draft and things like that, because that is a big part of what they want to continue to push in the community.
Yeah. Now, Larissa, have you opened Carbonite packs?
Oh, yeah. I opened one 2 days ago, and I pulled a Lamasu. Okay. So that was really nice. I love a Carbonite pack. Like I said, I love my shinies. But I think that this announcement and this stream today was a really good kind of show of good faith effort from FFG, that they are, like you said, listening to the community and taking that into perspective, and that they are making the changes that we want to see for the life of the game. And I think that bodes well, like I said, for the future.
Do we think it's, so because we talk about the future, do we think that it's too late? So I'm going to pose this question to Corey first, because you know, I see a lot of liquidation. A lot of sales for current Carbonites are just like, you could buy boxes at 150 at this point, 170. Mm. Do you think it's too late as a from the collecting perspective for these changes, or like there's time to recover?
I think there's time to recover still. There's the game's now, we're going into year 3 with this set, right? So it's not new anymore, but now, how are we going to bring things new to the game and new to the experience and new to opening packs? And so making these changes is a great start. And I think that we're going to talk about later in the podcast about what, you know, we can do to help bring the excitement back and build this community up again. But there was definitely some lows with some sets. But this is exciting. Exciting time.
How do we feel? And I guess I'm going to tell, this is for you, Rob, because you seem to pull showcase all the freaking time. How do we feel about Carbonite showcase rates, like being even, they cut it in half, right? It used to be 1 in 2 boxes. Now it's like 1 in like every
4
case.
Or every 1 case in 4. Now.
How do you feel about that? I mean, it probably doesn't matter, because you're probably going to pull one anyway, but like for us normies out there, how do you feel about that?
First of all, Corey pulled way more showcases in Jump to Lightspeed than any of us. I think he literally had a showcase every single box he opened. So don't get on me about pulling showcases left and right. But to be fair, I think it's a good thing, honestly. Like it was initially when they announced it was one in two boxes for Carbonites when Jump to Lightspeed was coming out. Like, I was super hyped about it because I was like, oh man, that means I'm going to be able to get like the showcases that I want. But the problem that has come out of this, and they even kind of said this on the stream, is that it sort of takes the specialness out of it. And like now the markets are kind of flooded with it. So like to your, you know, from a collector standpoint, now I'm not really the collector, but you know, like, you can get showcases for like under $100 in most cases. And like, not to say that like, that's, you know, that should be the determining factor on whether, you know, rates should be higher or lower, but it, you know, the fact that they're that common, comparatively speaking, takes away a little bit of the specialist and the charm. I mean, I remember the first showcase that I opened and I was like super hyped because I pulled it out of a regular pack. And it's like, now you're like, okay, cool. Like, I guess I got a 50-50 shot in this box of getting something, you know? So now, you know, now it's like 25% chance in a Carbonite, and you know, it's still the one in whatever it is, one in 288 in the regular one. So there's still some rarity to it. And I think that'll be a good thing overall.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that you're going to at least see a 30 to 50% bump in prices for all showcases for the sets going forward. That's just being, I think that's a reasonable ask. You're cutting in half, 50% increase, you know, 100% increase. I'm not gonna say 100, like, it seems pretty reasonable. So Larissa, as a recent showcase owner, pack opener, like, because I got my C-3PO in a regular pack, right? Uh-huh. So, and you got the Lamassu. Are you going to be trying to chase showcases in the new sets? Do you think it's going to be worth it? Or you feel like if you want it, you'll buy it separately as a single?
So I've never been like a chase kind of person. Like I'll decide before the set comes out how much I'm going to buy. And I usually buy that amount. And then if I have like a special something that I want, I'll go out and I'll buy it when I, you know, if I don't pull it. I also draft a lot, draft almost every week. So the, you know, buying other packs and continuing to buy things through the set, like I'll buy my initial allotment, if you will. But I continue to open packs throughout the set. So I always have a chance, I guess.
You know what?
Yeah. But yeah, if there's something I want in particular, I'll grab it.
I think this is a good point. There's a lot of drafters out there. Not everyone does constructed, you know, and this is great for drafters. There's going to just be like good cards, like good in the sense that like you can get these variant art cards relatively quickly, which I think is fantastic. And now you don't have to worry about like just dink it, like burning or trashing your foils. You're actually going to have to keep. You're probably going to keep them. Yeah.
I mean, I'm honestly, and it's something that I think we'll talk about in the main section, but I think leaning into the other formats outside of Premier is something that, like, as a community, I think we should be doing more. Like, I don't know about Larissa, but like up here, there is a very strong Premier community, but drafting and limited formats really are kind of limited to, you know, the initial, you know, 4 weeks of the set coming out, you know, when pre-release is happening, and then outside of that, there are some communities that are doing it, but for the most part, it's been constructed, and I think that's one of the ways to get people kind of involved in it. But we'll, like I said, we'll go into that in a little bit later.
Yeah, but there were more changes to Carbonite packs.
There were,
and with the serialized cards, and I've been like hammering on this forever.
Really,
right?
Corey? I haven't heard you talking about this at all.
So like, their serial cards, and they started off with 250 of each serialized card, and that's fine. It's great. It gives a lot of people an opportunity to get one of these cards, and I think that, you know, initially that's a good thing. But when you're talking about collectors and being a collector and wanting something special, you want that exclusivity, right? You want to feel like I am one of very few people that have this card.
You don't want the common man to get serialized,
right?
Cards.
And it's like they were so tied to having these like strict rules to the serialized, but so they are finally doing a variable serialized number. So they will have their 250 serialized card set, but then they'll also have a set of 100, maybe like five or six cards that are going to be a set of 100 serialized versions.
Or 50, they said.
Then they're going to have another set that's going to be of 50. So even rarer. So for those collectors like myself, I'm very excited for this announcement, because that chase, that feeling of trying to chase something is what really drives me to continue to open these collector packs. And now it's like going to be much stronger with these much more rare versions of cards. And I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I am excited as well. Blanket notice, if anyone gets a number four card and I will buy it off you at a reasonable price point. I don't want to get fleeced. But I love, for whatever reason, I'm a number four guy, and I have like a bunch of serialized number fours, so I will buy it off you. Selfless plug or shameless plug? It's not selfless. That's completely not selfless at all. But Rob, I interrupt you before you're going to say something.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I do think that the limiting of it, because I think they say it was like 6 to 10 groupings of cards in total are going to be limited to either one of 50 or one of 100, and then it's everything else is the 250, which I think is still fine. So my gut says we're going to get things like, you know, like like if it had been implied to this set, I can guarantee you like Amidala would have been the one of 50s. You know, like probably some of the more popular characters are going to be like the more limited ones. If I had to guess. Yeah, Boba Fett, you know, so they'll be, God, there's going to be a serialized Boba.
Yeah, and the next step after this is not tying it down to characters, right? Let's get some serialized other things like lightsabers.
Events and lightsabers.
Serialized events could be really interesting if they do like, they did the propaganda art, right, for this one. But, you know, like if you did propaganda art for like events where they're just kind of like, you know, I think of them as like, you know, like posters that you would see up on the walls in a cantina or something like that. And like that was the art for those. I think that could actually be really
cool. Larissa, do you agree with the sentiment? Should we do more than just characters? Or are you like, nah, I only want portraits?
No. I don't see how you would really do an event like that. I would be for an upgrade, like the lightsabers or something like that. So I think it lends itself to the more iconic things, which tend to be the recognizable characters, right? Mm-hmm. So if you had a particular, I guess an event, if you had like particular art, a very iconic scene or a very iconic title
or like Trench Run, right? Like Trench Run could have been like a serialized there. Like I know that's, you know, but like that's kind of where I think we're
they already did the Trench Run. They already did the Trench Run. It's Red 3, it's Red 5 and Victor Leader. So we're done. I was kidding.
You got the diptych.
But no, I do think like an iconic scene would be kind of cool. Like if, you know, as an event, prestige or serialized card. That would
make
be
it
cool.
All art versions out
Heck,
there. Yeah.
It, you know what would be funny? If they did a rare base serialized card and it's just like...
So,
one of two Sarlacc pits, that'd be hilarious.
But speaking of rare bases, Gil, we also had some news on that, didn't we?
Yes, tell me more.
Tell me more.
No, I'm kidding. They're replacing the rare base in the out, instead of taking up that last slot, they're gonna actually put it in where the base should be, which is like, thank you.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, it's not for Lawless Time. It's everything after that.
Yeah. Thank you, Spirit of Qui-Gon Jinn. I appreciate you.
To be perfectly honest, this was actually probably one of my favorite announcements out of this whole thing because, like, it feels so bad when you open up a pack and you're like, my rare was a base.
I feel but they're all good, right? I was kidding.
No, I feel this helps a lot with the Galactics too, because
Galactics
coming up
that.
And having a limited part at Galactics, like getting like, what if you're in the finals and you're just getting rare bases all over the place? Yeah. That would just suck so much.
Well, yeah, and they specifically said that. They specifically said like they wanted it for Galactics because they don't want that to happen. I mean, you can get unlucky in other ways, but you at least aren't going to get,
So you're a drafter. Have you drafted a rare base ever to be like, I'm playing this base? Like, it's happening.
I have never chosen it on purpose. Okay. I've been passed it as a last card.
That is
I think
so
that's
funny.
The natural inclination.
All right. Yeah. Before I move on to the next segment, Corey, any final words that we need to kind of talk about?
No. Well, just wanted to mention they did change OP pack. OP being organized play packs.
Oh, yeah.
Borders are no longer that foggy color border. It's going to be more similar to what you see on the prize walls at sectors and regionals. So we're going to see that. They did show off. If you go to the article online, you'll see it. You'll join our Discord. And we have a channel that has some spoilers on there. And you can see there's no border now. So they look gorgeous. That is a nice looking card.
That Rancor looks amazing. Like it honestly, it looks like some of the prestige art in some ways. Like to me, that's one of the more exciting things about organized play at this point, because like when just to reference other card games, I'm not going to name names, but you know, the organized play cards are actually highly sought after in a lot of other games because the art was just that much better, or like it's an alternate art that's harder to get a hold of. And like the fact that they're up in their game on this, because like not for nothing, like I was happy with the organized play packs. It's like cool free cards, but that misty border was kind of lame, not gonna lie. And the fact that it was like basically just the regular art for the card with a foggy border was kind of it was nice to be able to get like the hyperspace, like in sets 1 through 3, the hyperspace variants of the S cards, like that was cool. But you know, outside of that, I'm excited for these, because now there's probably still going to be some level of chase now on these as well, because if they look that much better, then you're going to be
all about playability
to pull them up
too.
Yep.
Like, and I'm curious if they'll do the surge foily, because the foil is different on these organized play pack cards. So I'm curious if they keep that.
All right. Well, suffice to say, there's a lot of good improvements. I think that this is going to be overall healthy and good for the community as well as collectors. Beautiful pieces of art. So we shall see what the rest of the weekly play is like. Hopefully we get a spoiler of this set as a podcast. And if we do, we will not share it with anybody. Nah, I'm just kidding. All right. So let's go on to the next segment. We're going to talk about the meta, and probably because we got a judge. We got an L1 here.
Yeah.
we're going to talk about some rules stuff, too. So, Rob, what do you got for us?
Well, I hear we had a couple PQs this weekend, guys. And it was some local. Gil, you went to one up in Connecticut, and Corey, you went to one down in Cherry Hill. I have been in the midst of moving, so I didn't go to any. But I'm going to be going to one this weekend. They're were some what I would call shakeups, actually, in terms of what we were seeing from, you know, post Beattle. So if you've been listening at all, you've been hearing us kind of talk about the rise of kind of Anakin Datawalt, Han One Green has been kind of showing up a lot, because those were the two top decks at Beattle, and so they've become popular and started to be played widely. Spoiler alert, they're still being played widely and they are still popular, but we've seen some changes in terms of decks coming in to compete. One of the big ones, and it's the one that actually took down the Cherry Hill PQ that you were at, Corey, piloted by none other than Ophir, is Yoda Datavault. I've seen two versions of this deck. One is Yoda Data Vault, and the other one is Yoda Force. But they're both both green.
So I hate to cut you off, Rob, but I don't want to talk about Wu. I'm sorry. I hear that dude's name all the time.
No, like, I know. I'm just saying it's
I'm just saying Danival. There's a great, which by the way, there is a great video. He did put a video out there, and if you do support like the competitive scene in that sense, like that's a deck they talked about and he's shared. Like, so it's like should not come as no surprise that this deck like wrecked it, and like there was 11 top eights, and there was like what, like 14 or something ever like in all the tournaments. So like the conversion rate was really good when you consider sorry, go ahead.
No, it was and this deck is it is scary in a lot of ways, because it plays a lot of ramp, so you're getting to your bigger stuff, and the just, you know, broad strokes with this deck, you're kind of trying to get to seven as quick as possible, seven, eight, nine as quick as possible, because you just have some absolute backbreakers in there. And it starts with Kelleran Beck. Kelleran is just a really great board. I'm going to get to play something else off of him. Then you go into Yoda Flip, and then you have Bo-Katal it up. You just have bomb after bomb after bomb, and the hero pack.
When we have decks like, so Larissa, this is a question for you. When we have decks like this, so like Yoda has a very unique leader mechanic, right? And there, he's not the only ones. Just he's the one that came up, but they're all, there's always others that like people always have questions on. How do you as a judge like approach or prepare for that going into like this, like a meta? Because like, you don't know, this is week one. Like, you have to like kind of know like all the leaders. Like, do you actually like learn all the leaders and all their abilities, or like do you just stick to very specific rule sets? Like, how do you approach doing that as a judge?
So you definitely want to be aware of the meta and what's going to be popular, or what you might come up against, similar to the way you would prepare as a player, right? It's not as granular as the way you would prepare as a player, because rules applications are a little bit different. Understanding the why behind an interaction is more important than understanding the individual interaction, so that you can apply it properly across the board, right? So there was a lot of when Cassian, new Cassian, came out, there was a lot of people applying the lurking tie kind of idea to Cassian with the can't be captured or defeated, and they don't work the same. It's not the same background information, right? So it's more about digging into the rule set and knowing and understanding those interactions. And then when you're in the moment, share responsibility, right? I will forever, if I am absolutely any bit unsure, call another judge and, you know, step off to the side, discuss. There's always a head judge as well. So someone, you know, there's always additional help. So sharing that responsibility and learning together is really, I think, the best way to approach that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing that insight. I never really thought about like, oh, a judge should know the meta.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, like, duh, that's such an obvious thing. Rob, was the meta pretty wide this weekend?
It was. And one of the other things that we're starting to see is a rise in control, which kind of follows, right? We've had a very strong mid-range presence post-Beattle with Anakin and Han Wan, right? You know, we're not seeing like the huge top end stuff, but now what the meta is starting to react to, we're starting to see a lot more controls. So a couple of the interesting ones that I saw, there is a very, very hard control Daedra Blue that was at, I think it was at Cherry Hill actually, that was top three. The other one that's interesting, and the one that took down the Connecticut one that you were at, was Palpatine Blue, Colossus specifically. So he's back again. And there's some interesting wrinkles there with him. Again, it is a very hard control deck. I mean, I think if I was reading through his deck, and I think the only thing in there that was like a unit that was earlier than like a turn, like a three, there was only one three cost in there. I think it was the client, and like that was it. And then it was like everything was eight or later. So it is hard control, nothing but removal spells or events, rather, basically up until the point where you're ready to close the game.
Yeah. There's interesting mechanics there. I think what that person did was really predict the meta well, mm-hmm. Because what beats mid-range? Control. They just do it bigger. They do it harder, right? So and all these Anakins and Han 1 green players were really suppressing all the aggro players. So that person those control players have made a really great call. And I think with the showing of this past weekend, where you see like Anakins and Hans and still other controls doing really well, like mm-hmm. They're only gonna go bigger. I don't think anyone's like aggro might find a space, but like you have to dodge all like 30% of the meta is gonna be decks that are meant to beat you at any given time. That's tough. Corey, did you play this weekend?
Yeah, I was in Cherry Hill. I went to. Right. It's funny because I was there and I saw Brian from Golden Dice, and he was like, "Oh, who's here? I guess I can just go home now."
And he didn't want to talk about Wu anymore, Corey.
I know, but it's funny because he had mentioned that. But Larissa was there as well, so I got to see her. And yeah, a bunch of people, listeners and things. So met a new guy who had never opened a showcase. And I felt like, I was like, oh man, this guy, I can't believe he's never opened Showcase. He's been playing since set one. It's crazy. So,
wow.
Might have helped him out a little bit with some.
With giving, oh my God, that's funny. Okay. So,
but yeah, it was a lot of fun. I did terribly. I started off great and then I just I crashed
you
and
know,
burned.
You know, the two PQs we went to were two of like the biggest ones in the world. This year, for this first week, I think there was only like four or five that were more than 60 players, 60 something players. Like,
well, there was only four that had seven rounds of Swiss.
Yeah,
because you need 74 players for seven rounds, I think.
Right, judge.
I think the final count for Cherry Hill was 76.
Yeah,
76,
we had seven rounds. So I dropped after six.
I had seven rounds as well. But it's funny because we have the biggest ones. I think there was one in UK.
Yep.
UK and Illinois were the other Illinois. Big
there was
ones.
There's one in Germany that was at 98. Just
was it Germany? Yeah. Still, there's like again five or not many. A lot of them were in the 60 to 30 range. There was a PQ for 10 in
it was
Korea.
In South Korea. Yep.
That's what I need to be. What the...
We need to go to South Korea. We'll bring Larissa. She'll be our head judge.
But
Better learn Korean real quick.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you brought up the Bristol UK one, though, because that one had a very interesting deck that won. That was Phasma Green. So we are... Chrome Dome herself is going to be probably showing up a little bit here. I think we finally hit the critical mass of first order cards now. It is a viable strategy, and it's interesting. You know, I'm excited to see that because there were some other like kind of one offs that took PQs. There was a Kasuda Tarkintown. There was a Sabe Tarkintown as well that took one. So we are seeing a lot. While there are the staples that we were coming to expect in this set, we are seeing some innovation and some curveballs that people maybe aren't expecting.
Yeah, I think at the moral of the story, things can be competitive. You just gotta believe, gotta play your game. I mean, if you interviewed 100 Swoo players and it was like, will Phasma Green win a PQ week one? I guarantee like 90% of them would be like, no. So,
but here we are.
Here we are. Larissa, what did you play this weekend?
I played Ahsoka, Legends of the Force Ahsoka Green. So that was formerly my Ahsoka Double Blue. And I transferred or like converted it midweek to Green specifically because I wanted to make Amidala a Sentinel. Like that was the entire idea. So
that's
I
a pretty good
Amidala.
Idea. Yes, yeah, pretty good idea.
Yeah, I put Amidala and then Jar Jar and Naboo, the Royal Naboo Starfighter.
Yeah,
or Star something or other. So you flip Ahsoka on six. If you're lucky enough to have both of those in the plot row, she hits for nine, and it works.
That's I didn't even think about that. And you apply a Sentinel something, right?
When she hits, you make something else a Sentinel, yeah.
That's nasty.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with the Green Rasmus. So, Rob, what else we got? What else we got in terms of meta?
So I think the really big takeaway from this also, just in general, is that to me, piggybacking a little bit off of what you were saying a little bit earlier, Gil, like, while there are the standards, right, there are the decks that are going to be the decks to beat in the meta right now. If you think you've got a line, if you think you've got a wrinkle and you're convinced of it, stick to it, run it through, run the lines. If you've been on our Discord at all, you'll see myself and a couple other people are toying around with a deck right now, and we think we got something with it. You know, whether or not it actually stays or not is there, but get the games in, play them through, because, you know, at the very least, if you're confident in the deck that you're playing and you know the lines, you can go in and you can do well. And if people don't know what to expect from it, you can do well partially just by taking people by surprise. But beyond that, I mean, you know, it's just good practice. Know your lines, know your decks. It's important, you know. Changing decks every week is fun, and sometimes it feels satisfying, but knowing a deck inside and out, that's the consistency there is what's really going to kind of help. And I think that's what we're seeing with a couple of these kind of curveball decks. It's people who had a belief in this particular combination leader and cards, and they're running with it. So yeah
great. I have a question for you, Larissa, because you're playing and you're also a judge. Do those things ever conflict with you, or you're like, oh, this I need, like, what, how does that work?
It does. So obviously if you're judging a competitive event, you can't also play in that same event. If you're you can play in events, though. So I have now, about 50-50 on what I've judged competitively versus what I've played in competitively. And I think I might go full-time judging competitively because I don't, like, I'm not the greatest player, but I have so much fun watching everyone else play and seeing all the cool decks with the weird tech, and, you know, watching, because there is a pretty heavy presence in my area, and a lot of, like, I can commute to a lot of big other areas with heavy presence, and my locals can do the same. It's fun to see my locals win and to meet all the other people from all the communities that I'm a part of and watch them win. So that, you know, I like the living vicariously through the other people.
You know, it's funny you say that because, you know, friend of the podcast, Jonah Kelvin, he has mentioned that he's a terrible Star Wars player. Star Wars only player. Like, he's a little go like 0-7 in a tournament, but he knows all the rules. So so he's really, so that's interesting. I would love to join you at the judging one day. So you get a store to hashtag sponsor us. We'll get there.
But Gil, how am I going to live vicariously through you? Because I am a terrible.
Well, I have a segue into something that I want to talk about in regards to rules. Last thing. So I would love your guys' perspective, because I think this rule change is going to lead to a lot of collusion. And so I'm going to read it to you first. So it's a intentional drawing rules, like, changing. So when people draw at the end of the tournament, like when they're trying to get to top eight, they're like, they do all these calculations. Determining the outcome of a match. Players are allowed to choose intentionally to draw their match at any point during their match. They can choose to do that. So long as they do not go to great lengths to gain information to inform their decision. They cannot make an agreement in conjunction with other matches. Okay. They are allowed to see the result of a match near them and then choose to draw or concede, but they cannot receive the information from a third party or let a neighboring match know what they plan to do. Now, in theory, what this is telling me is that if I'm playing Glorissa and we're like in game two and we're like, wait, I think and we want to see if we could both get into top eight. We can stop, look around us, and they'd be like, draw, right? And I think, but that's like the best case scenario, right? Where no one's like talking. But the rule says you can't, like, you know, do this in conjunction. But what if someone just like says, oh man, I can't believe table one, the undercard, is about to lose. That's crazy. Like, how do you enforce this? I honestly think that, like, while the intention is good with this rule, like, change, it's gonna lead to a lot of just like either overt or subliminal, like, collusion. And I don't know, what do you, I know, kind of blast, I just kind of said this out loud to you guys, like, but any initial reactions to this rule change?
I don't necessarily think it's gonna change that much at all, to be honest.
I think it's like kind of trying to combat it, I think, really, more than anything else. Because, like, they're saying explicitly, like, you can't get information from a third party. So, like, that to me is talking about, like, you know, teams basically feeding information to other players within the team, you know, so we're now being able to kind of avoid somewhat. I mean, it's not, it's still a little bit murky, but it's always going to be a little bit murky, you know, but now we're saying like, I can't go to a third party when I'm, you know, or I can't have a third party come over and be like, hey, you know, this team member won. If you draw, you're in, you know, like that kind of stuff.
I guess the question is, how do you enforce it? Like, Larissa, I would love your opinion here, because for me, I'll just talk. I mean, I'm not like slimy like that. But if I was going to do this, I would be like, oh, I would just say things out loud and like talk to someone. I would talk to Corey while Rob's playing and be like, oh, my gosh, if this specific scenario happens, then like Rob's going to get top eight. Really? Like, how, you know, like what?
All Rob needs to do is draw this match and then he could make it into the top eight.
How would you enforce it?
Taylor, do you want to draw?
So I've had some personal stuff the last 2 days, so I haven't gotten to dig into the rules in a very detailed way. But I do think that the fact that something's been put down on paper, and that there is now a precedent, or you know, there's room for a precedent to be set, and the idea that we're watching this is something that we are concerned about and we are looking at, I think that's important, and kind of sets the stage for enforcement. I don't know exactly how that would go at this point, and I think we still have guidance as judges coming out to us that will kind of dig in and elaborate on that more than maybe what's written. But yeah, it's definitely something that I know was a feels bad. There were instances in the community in the past that was a big feels bad about certain people dropping and things like that. But we want to avoid at all costs unfun scenarios, right? That's why they ban cards. That's why they do all that kind of stuff. But excuse me, not ban, suspend.
Suspend.
But yeah, I think it might be challenging to enforce, but that's what we're there for. That's what we signed up for.
I love that perspective, and I guess I don't want to dig too much deep. I was interested about this rule change, you guys' perspectives. But that's a great perspective, because at the end of the day, there's something written at this point. And like you said, it'll help set the precedent for if something, you know, a bad actor does something about this, like something like this, like we have a rules to coalesce around so that we can find a minimal solution so that we don't have that feels bad type of moment.
I will say, like in Cherry Hill, the top two players finished 5-0-2 because they just drew the last two matches.
Well, those are, I think for me, those are like the obvious ones. Like if you're 5-0, just draw.
You just draw.
It's more like the people who are like have one draw and like one loss or that kind of range where like you don't, it depends on if you're being paired down or paired up. And then that changes your breakers. So if you do the math out loud, like it helps you determine like, okay, I need to win this or can I just draw? Because even if I just draw, you might have the same amount of points, but you need better breakers, quote unquote, which I don't know all the intricacies
the math
at all.
That goes into
the math at all. Yeah. But like, yeah, for sure. But I don't want to, go ahead, Rob.
Well, I was going to say the one thing I will say is I mean this in the best way possible. We're probably going to get it wrong the first couple times. There's going to be something that's going to go sideways and people are going to be up in arms about it. But I think the positive thing in this, and this is what is somewhat what you said, Lewis, is something what you're saying, Corey, is that there is now something that we can rule to. And even if we get it wrong the first couple times, we're going to get it right eventually. And the community will be better for it.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So let's move on to the last topic. Just building a Star Wars Unlimited community or rebuilding something if your community was there and it is no longer around. So I think it's a very important topic. Kind of fits in the last week. We were talking about, is Swoo going to be here for the long haul? I think generally we all talk about yes, but depends on the definition of long haul. But to do that, you need people to build. You need to have a community of people that play, and then also buy product. It's all kind of at the end of the money and socialism not socialism, the social the social aspect, not socialism. Sorry, I'm gonna, someone's gonna put a comment in here and be like, Gil is a democratic socialist, he's Marxist sharing, blah blah blah. All right,
cards for everyone,
cards for him. Sorry, anyway, I would love your perspective on this. I guess we'll start with Rob. I'd love your perspective first, because we had a community, right, at one point. It, like, died, and now it's being rebuilt. It kind of fits the entire thing. And then I would love, from a different geographical location, Larissa, talk to us about your community down where you're at.
Yeah.
Yeah. So community building is hard, and you guys have kind of heard me talk about this over a number of different podcasts. And the number, my kind of number one rule of community building is you got to show up, right? So you know, whether that's you as someone who may be organizing or you know, loosely organizing events, but also, you know, the community as a whole kind of has to show up. And to what you're kind of talking about before, Gil, it's like, look, you know, we got to go to the stores, we got to show up, you know, not saying we have to buy product or you have to buy product, but it helps to create an atmosphere where the stores will want to continue to support the game because they're making money off of it. Because at the end of the day, that's part of why, I mean, like, you know, these are spaces for nerds to gather, but you know, they're businesses, they got to make money at the end of the day. For me, though, I think in terms of rebuilding, one of the things that I've kind of noticed and I've been kind of watching in terms of, you know, how other card game communities will start to do this is that while the competitive community is important, and this game is, I think, very strongly balanced around the competitive scene, specifically Premier, I think having support and supporting other formats and varied ways of playing the game become really important, because turns out not everyone is a competitive player or enjoys competitive play in that same level, right? Like, everybody comes to play to win, but, like, you know, not everybody's going to PQs every weekend. And having, you know, support for draft formats beyond just the initial pre-release window, or limited formats beyond just the initial pre-release window, as much as I hate it, Twin Suns, you know, having support for those types of formats are important, because it's variety is the spice of life, right?
Yeah, I think, no, that's great points. So this is like Northern Jersey, Central Northern Jersey. Larissa, does community building, at least from your perspective, like those same types of principles and approaches that Robin mentioned, do you think that applies from where you, around the areas that you live?
I think those are staples, right? Think being open to other formats, when you think about it, draft probably has the lowest barrier to entry, right? So there's a little bit of upfront overhead, rules overhead, right, in learning how to draft. But you don't have to come to the table with anything. If you're talking about low stakes and, you know, low competitive, very casual, Twin Suns is great. You need 2 liters, you build a deck with a theme, you throw whatever color, it's only a one of, you're probably not going to see it anyway, right? Like, I literally have a friend who packs 9 Twin Suns decks, and we rip.
My God. Oh my
it's
God.
It's great. She's a master builder. It's amazing. But we rip games of Twin Suns, and we just laugh and we have fun. And those feel goods, those memories are what keep people coming back, right? People want to enjoy the game. They don't want to be blown out by the same meta deck every time they go to weeklies. Yeah. But that doesn't mean there's no place for Premier. I mean, Premier, like we said, is a primary, is one of the primary ways to play the game. And I think that's, you know, being open to the variety is the point, right? And the more casual, low barrier to entry formats are a great way to do that. Outside of that, like, you know, you have to show up, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm not saying you as an individual have to show up. There's been other people who've been talking about this lately. There are other ways to play the game, but if you don't show up, you know, there's no, if you build it, they will come. If you don't show up, they stop doing it, right? So you have to show up. And, you know, bring your friends, teach your friends, teach your coworkers, have a, you know, go to a bar, have a learn to play night, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, I love that. So, you know, those are great stuff. And it's good to see that, you know, like you said, they're staples. So you do this in one region, it's like repeatable in that sense. Now, I would love, so Corey, I think in terms of like life stage, you have like kids, if I may talk about them. You have two kids. So you have a different set of responsibilities than other people who might be playing this game. And so when we think about the community, like, how do you feel like you can plug in? Because Rob and Larissa have mentioned that you show up, right? But you sometimes you can't, like, you just can't, you know, you got commitments.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So like, no, I mean,
that's the thing.
Love your perspective.
Like, yeah. The showing up is like, just, you know, parodying everything. That is the most important thing to build or rebuild a community, is to be present and to be there. But obviously with life and with family and things, it's not always simple or easy, and trying to be able to find that time to get to your locals or things is difficult. So having, you know, being able to play within your family, or sharing that with your friends and like coworkers, is another thing that you mentioned, that Larissa, you were saying, is like being, you know, finding ways to play the game that's not necessarily at your locals, to then share it with them. It's like, hey, there's are these locals that happen where you can get product there, and you can win packs potentially, or win prizes. And so then sharing it outside of those specific places, and then push them to go when you can't go, is another way to help hopefully spread the word. And then, you know, playing with your family to get them to be interested, and then having that, you know, core group of people to try to spread it along is an important thing when you can't get out to a local.
Yeah, no, I will say, so I helped build this Padawan Unlimited community. It's a digital community, not in person. But one of the things that I do to entice other people and like just get people excited about the game is that whatever prize packs I win or participation packs, I actually involve everyone around me in opening them. Not at the store. I'm talking about like friends, family, kids. Like, I'm just like, hey, open this pack with me. And we're like, we do the rip and everything. We do the flip or whatever. And I can't tell you, it's happened twice now where showcases have been involved. And these are regular booster packs.
It's awesome.
This was the last year's packs. I remember this story.
So, well, there's three of them actually. So actually three. This is so funny.
There you go.
So one with you guys, which I think people in the podcast kind of know. The first one that happened for me, I was like, I have a cousin who collects Pokemon cards. And we were at a park. I had like my last six packs of a Spark of Rebellion box, when those boxes were like $200. It was crazy. And we open them like flip, flip, flip. And my cousin, who has the last pack, flips it. And it's a Krennic showcase. And we're like, oh my God. This is when Krennic, you know, like showcases meant stuff. And then literally like 2 days ago with the C-3PO, last thing, I was like, these are prizes I got from my top 16 placement at the last PQ, at the PQ we went to. And the last pack had a C-3PO, and I was like, and my little nephew was there. It was like, it was a thing. I think, yeah, that doing stuff like that involves everything. Quick pause. And sorry. We're back. Had some technical difficulties. So we're going to finish out the last 5 minutes, still talking about building and rebuilding the community. I think the one thing I do want to talk about for this next section is when, you are rebuilding. So let's say Star Wars kind of died out for a little bit and you want to rebuild it back. What are some strategies or tips that we could potentially do to increase it? I'll go first, and then we'll go around table as maybe like a minute or so to talk about it. For me, mine was I started podcasts, and I started like all these other things, and I just like constantly posted, like Rob said, and I made it a digital experience. Because I can't always go to events. I mean, I can't always go to weeklies, right? I sometimes don't want to play online because I just don't have the physical cards like to play. So not everyone has that kind of drive, I'll say, but there's an option to do things online. Especially if you want to find a safe space for yourself, right? You build it. And I actually want to talk to, I want to go to Larissa real quick, because she is a member of a community that was started because someone's like, I want to find a community, right? And they're like, build it. They're like, I could just do that. So Larissa, if you could share about one of those communities that we might not even know about, right?
Yeah. So I am a member of the Night Sisters. Very proud to say that. I think it's super cool. So I found the Night Sisters on Reddit. One of the person who started it, Jennifer Madamzola, if you're on Discord, popped into Reddit and was in the SWU Reddit and was like, I'm looking for a female community based around this game. And Reddit being the way it is was like, well, do it yourself. She said, I think I will. And she created a Discord, and I joined immediately as soon as that was created. And it was a couple months before Galactics that happened. So Galactics was kind of our like bursting point, right? We had we were all spotting women everywhere and saying, hey, have you heard about the Night Sisters? Do you want to join? And now we have women all over the country, some wow. people outside of the country who are part of this community and have gone back to their communities and started inviting and pulling in other members. And it's amazing. And I think that goes to show, you know, we know that women in TCGs aren't necessarily the majority, right? But that doesn't mean that you can't find something else to build a community around, right? Whether it's related to the community, you know, if you like draft, you form a draft pod or whatever it is, you find some other kind of identity to build with. Find your people, find your tribe and build with them, teach them, bring them in. I think that's a great way to build community, especially if you're maybe not the majority or the usual TCG player.
And I kind of want to piggyback on that, because Corey knows this from our board game organizing back. Very much adhere to the board gaming is for everyone mindset, and that applies to SWU. I think it's one of the ways to keep your community healthy is to be inclusive as possible. That means all walks of life, all genders, all races, all creeds, all that kind of stuff. Like you want people to come in and play the game because people want to play the game, and you want to play with as many people as possible. If you limit it to your, you know, typical clubhouse atmosphere, then eventually people are going to move on. People are going to change games, move away, you know, those types of things. And then suddenly the community that you had that was thriving is going to, you know, collapse in on itself. So diversifying and being as welcoming and as broad base as you can is a great way to keep your community healthy. And sometimes that means, you know, in your case, Larissa, it's like finding your community. And because, to your point, women in TCGs, it is not something that has traditionally been seen as something that's, you know, everywhere in the community, but I think it should be. It's not that it because it hasn't been, it can't be, but, you know, getting that, and bringing that forward and supporting other people, you know, representation matters at the end of the day, you know?
Yes. 100%.
How about you, Gary? As we wrap up the last couple minutes of this pod.
One thing I would say is kind of similar to you guys, but if you want something to happen, you need to go, you know, go for it. You need to build it, as they said. But like, let's say you really want to do a tournament. Like there really aren't any showdowns really that like outside of showdowns or things. Like if your local store is not having one, or if then make it yourself, like ask the store, hey, like I want to have a tournament for SWU. I think we can get, you know, 8 to 12 people maybe. Could you help us out with some prizing? Can you do things to invite people to come to your store? Because if they're coming to the store, then potentially you're going to get customers and they'll come back. So helping your local store to create events for the Star Wars community can help them grow, and then help, you know, people coming back. So that you kind of have to scratch their back and for them to scratch your back, kind of deal. And if you don't do that, like if you're not going to be the one to do that, then who's starting it, right? So someone's got to start that. Someone's got to be that one guy that's like, I'll do it. Like I feel weird and embarrassed, like asking and being that one person that's standing up when everyone's sitting down. But if you're not going to do it, no one else is going to join you.
Yeah, don't wait for others to do something if you could take initiative and do it yourself. And when in doubt, exactly. Do it online. just like the Stars, the Padawan Unlimited Pup League. So we did finish our first one. We had some hiccups, but I think it went relatively smoothly. We had 16 people, including myself. So maybe we could boost up to 24 this time. I know there was a lot of interest in a lot of different ways, so we could probably get that there. We'll work on getting a store showdown kit. That would be kind of cool. But anyway, guys and gal, thank you so much for everything this evening. It was a pleasure, as always. Larissa, thank you for joining us. It was such great perspective. I think it's very important to share that perspective with the community. Hope everyone out there enjoyed the show. And until next time, may the force be with you.